Hello, and welcome to Media News Podcast with me, Mark Campbell. Media News aims to be an authentic voice, bringing you real, truthful stories from the Middle East, with a particular focus on the Kurdish question that is often ignored, self-censored, or suppressed by the mainstream media platforms. Today, we are very happy to be joining in partnership with the London Kurdish Film Festival to talk to director and filmmaker Dirk Schaefer about his film Bekar Evi, or The Bachelor House, which is being shown at the Global Kurdish Film Festival right now. The Global Kurdish Film Festival is being organized by the London Kurdish Film Festival in conjunction with around 10 other Kurdish Film Festival committees around the world. Obviously, because of the COVID pandemic, they have organized themselves to show this year's Kurdish Film Festival online, with more than 100 titles that you will be able to access completely free of charge online from anywhere in the world. And all films are going to be available to watch right up until the 27th of April. So to do that, you can just pop along to globalkurdishfilmfestival.com and just sign in, and away you go. So, Dirk, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm itching to talk about your fantastic, amazing film, which I absolutely loved.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I would just like to tell our listeners just a little bit about you. So you won the Best Director Award at the Max Ufels Festival for your film debut, The White Dwarves, in 1989. Your early work was inspired by Rainer Werner Fassbinder, yet you established your own enigmatic style with films like Wilma Lives a Long Way Away, 1991, 28,000 Wishes, 1993, which both premiered at the San Sebastian International Film Festival. And throughout the following years, you started to make documentaries for German TV. And then you continued with education, and you completed your master's degree at the Academy of Media Arts in Cologne. And then you resettled in Istanbul in 2006. You began a teaching career within the film department at the Istanbul Bilge University and continued making short films and documentaries, among them And They Live in Mardin in 2009 and A Sort of Love in 2012. Which received an honourable mention at the DOK Leipzig Film Festival. And also, we're here today to talk about Bekar Evi, your latest film, The Bachelor House. Which is just, I really love that film. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the sweetest films I think I've watched for ever such a long time. And I'm just itching to ask you questions about it. Firstly, you know, it's, I mean, first of all, they're not actors. Please don't tell me that they're actors.
No, they are real.
Yeah, it's incredible because you've got really so intimate access with these characters who are so comfortable with the camera being there, and you're able to tell the stories of seven Kurdish men. I'm presuming there's one or two Alevis amongst them. Would I be right?
No, they're all Sunni Kurdish people.
Because I thought I saw a portrait of Ali.
This was just a relict of another group that had lived in this bachelor house before. And I felt this was just like it should be. I mean, because there are a lot of different workers joining, coming back and forth. And so we left it like it was.
I see. So enigmatic. I understand why you have this enigmatic. Yes. Yeah. So please, Dirk, tell us how on earth you came to this project, and tell us how you were able to tell such a sensitive and beautiful story about these Kurdish men who are presumably in Turkey are stereotyped as sort of macho, if not macho, sort of terrorist sympathizers. But obviously we see a completely different story, don't we, in the BEC-RAV?
Yes, you know, it took me quite a long time to make this film. And if I go back in my life 30 years ago, I was on a trip to Turkey, and I stayed for like 5 weeks, and I was especially in the east of Turkey, because that was the places I wanted to see. At that time, I did not really distinguish so much between Turkish or Kurdish. And I lived in Berlin, in West Berlin then. And of course, I had the chance to meet Turkish people. And I, once I got back to Berlin, decided to learn Turkish. That took me years to learn. And I jump a little bit forward. In 2006, I had the chance to go to Istanbul as an associate professor at Bilgi University. And that was a turning point for me, because I could live in this culture, in terms of ethnic mixed culture of Turkey. And Istanbul, especially as an artist or as a filmmaker, especially, you feel like in paradise, you know, and you really come to terms with new stories, with new characters. And as I was always interested in characters who are outsiders in a society, but against their will, that is something also quite important, I finally had the chance to do films that dealt with Kurdish people. The first film was a short documentary about street sellers in Istanbul in 2002. That was also the first time I was introduced to a bachelor house, to BEC-RAV. 10 years later, I did a long-term observational documentary with a Kurdish man who is also a protagonist in this new film. It's Hajo.
Okay.
He has been a very important person in my life, because it started a friendship when we did this first documentary. And many things happened in his life and in the life of his family. And so I could relate to the daily life of these seven men very easily.
Wow. And how did the, the filming of it, I mean, it looks like, you know, when you first watch the film, it looks as though, you know, there's been a little bit of preparation with the camera and the crew, but then, you know, it's basically seven men, seven Kurdish men who have come to Istanbul from Eastern Anatolia, Kurdistan. Four of them work on a construction site, one dishwasher, toy maker, and somebody who sells food on the streets. And it's all about their daily lives. What was the period of time that you filmed over, or was there a script indeed involved in this?
Well, you know, it was the second try actually to make this film. In 2018, I had the chance to finance the film, and I wanted to prepare the shooting. And I realized that it was almost impossible to get hold of those men for the shooting period. We always had to reorganize ourselves, because these men, they are very important for their families. So that means whenever there's something happening that affects their family, they have to leave. So there was always the chance or possibility that one of those protagonists would not be with us the next day. And so we finally agreed on a time schedule, on a time slot for 2 weeks, which is very short, you can imagine.
Gosh,
so we had to prepare ourselves, and also to agree that these men would not feel like that their life would be totally ruled by this shooting, because that was not something that they would feel comfortable with. And so we had agreed on 2 weeks shooting, and it was the time before the Kurban Bayramı. I think it's called the Eid, Al-Eid English.
A religious festival,
Yes. And that would mean that they would leave Istanbul anyway. So that was also quite naturally the framing, the dramaturgy of the story.
Yes, no, absolutely. I mean, what you're telling me just makes the film all the more extraordinary. You know, in the 2 weeks in the run up to the Eid Bayram, when everybody, most of the men are returning, you know, to their families in Southeast Turkey.
Yes.
And then so like, for example, Miro's story, his unrequited love for Suzanne, which was so painful to watch. Was that true? Was that?
Well, you know, it's important also to mention that with Miro, I had this trouble that he was going to be forced to marry a girl, as he told in the film.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was very important to have him in the film. Of course, as a director, and you have a vision of the characters, and you are happy when you finally can put it all together. And Miro was important because he became actually also during the shooting more or less my main character. I realized that it would be strong to have a young person that has to deal with his current life and how he can cope with it and how he can manage to have a different life in the future, which is now, of course, something that he speaks about in the end. And so it was very important for me to keep him. Once he said, I think I have to go to the village, and they force me now, and they want me to marry. And I said, please, Miro, don't go. It was really something I had to negotiate with him. But he was very happy because he didn't want to marry and he didn't want to go. So
I know. He asks Lokman, doesn't he, actually, in the film, for his advice about that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. This was the first time that they talked about it. And of course, there is a moment when we talked before the scene, and I said, Miro, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe you can talk with the others about your problem. And so the way we come together with all those little stories was, it was my task to conduct all the characters, right?
Absolutely incredible. And of course, there was one other very strong character who made an amazing presence in the film. Is it Gulink? Blossom?
Oh, the cat.
Yes.
Gulink would be the pronunciation. Yeah. The Kurdish word for blossom.
Gulink. Blossom. Yes. What an amazing cat. So it was extraordinary. Right. The strength character of that cat was absolutely...
We could not expect that it would come out that well, I tell you. We were quite afraid that things would happen. We always had to make sure that it would not run away, jump out of the window, or would have any trouble. But to be honest, the producer of my film, she has a lot of knowledge and expertise with difficult subjects in Turkey. Çiğdem Mater is her name.
Okay.
And she actually was a little bit angry with me because she loves cats.
Yeah.
And after the third day when Guli came to us, and I mean, Miro took care of her, so he handled her in the best way, which we see in the film. But still, she suffered a little bit. She suffered from the environment a little bit. You could see that. And so after 3 days, and we wanted to make her go home again, and it turned out that the couple, an elder couple who gave us this cat, they wanted to leave her somewhere else. And so we decided to find a good home for the cat. We could not take care of her.
Yeah.
Some days after the cat was like, she had finished the shooting, she was supposed to go to her new home, and I don't want to name the family, to tell the name of the family. It's a very famous and very rich family in Turkey, and they adopted the cat, and they were so happy for her. You know, they said, "Oh, at least our cat now has become rich." You know, don't know whether I could tell the story now in the way so that you could understand it, but.
Absolutely. No, you absolutely did. I was worried about poor old Blossom going back in a truck all the way back to Van in the heat. So I'm glad that you've explained that she ended up in a well-ventilated flat, I'm sure, in Istanbul. And of course, we have to tell our listeners that it wasn't just any old ordinary, well, I mean, excuse me, but no disrespect to ordinary cats, but this was a very special cat, wasn't it?
A van cat, which is interesting. Yes, it's interesting because for many Kurdish people, the van cat also is a symbol for their culture. It is, the province of Van is a Kurdish province, mostly Kurds live there. And so I felt quite happy that we have this element as well in the film.
Absolutely. And for those who, you know, those who are listening, they've really got to see Blossom to really appreciate her. You know, one green eye, one blue eye, pure white, you know, the character, which I've never really seen from a cat. I thought it really had quite a Kurdish character, actually, I have to say. Very, very strong character.
Well, let me add something, Mark, which is important, understand how I felt when I did the film and why I trusted also my protagonists, and I felt ready to do this film. There was something quite peculiar that I experienced with my Kurdish friends, with Kurdish workers, with people who are forced, you know, to do labor that would not actually suit them. They have much more to offer. They have much more talents. And that's why I realized that Kurdish people, or some of them that I know, they can do everything.
Yeah.
So they can also be in a movie. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If for them, it's natural. Whenever there is a moment, a chance, they can expand, they can portray themselves, they do it. This is something, hopefully, I could express myself. I mean, I'm not English speaking person.
No, Derek, that absolutely came through in the film, you know, because I mean, I think as a viewer, you're questioning, crikey, are these very good actors, or, you know, are they able to depict, you know, ordinary Kurdish life so incredibly well?
When we did the shooting, we realized, and this was also crucial, that they would not be affected so much by the camera. They were able to interact immediately, to interact all the time, because that is what makes them alive. You know, they are living together and they have a strong will of solidarity. And there's something that we can learn, you know, from them.
Absolutely. I mean, incredibly, I mean, the situation of the Kurds in Turkey is obviously, you know, one where all of them would experience, you know, grotesque racism and discrimination on a daily basis, just, you know, just expressing, you know, their Kurdishness out on the streets. And the sort of lives that they're living on the construction sites and the daily, you know, selling fish. And, you know, this is also a result of their Kurdishness because of the economic, you know, policies of the Turkish state towards the southeast of Turkey has completely, you know, ruined the economy there. But I thought that, you know, the humor and the strength of character, just, you know, there's so many questions I'd like to ask you about it, but we're running out of time a little bit. But that sort of political side of it, obviously, you know, we did get a glimpse, you know, from time to time. Hajo when he was saying, you know, when we try to defend ourselves, they call us terrorists. And there was one time when Ikram and Hajo were having a conversation about Selo, which, you know, if you know the Kurdish issue, that's an obvious, reference to Selahattin Demirtas, the leader of the HDP, who's imprisoned. But can I ask, was there a sort of, you know, was there a, a sort of, did you feel a sort of sense of, that you had to self-censor yourself in any way in regards to the Kurdish issue?
Well, at first I would rather mention that I made a difference in terms of which character and which protagonist would be able and willing to talk about politics in the first place.
Yeah.
Because I understood that, for example, Lokman was not willing to talk about it. And I would never force this on him. Anyway, I did not force any subject or any comment. But I knew that there was a moment when Hajo and Ikram with Miro, they're sitting together, that I felt like they want to talk about it, you know? And the scene was much longer. Yeah. The scene was in my hands, and so I just had to take care of it and to be sensitive about how to expose it. And I felt like we understood how they feel, and it was not overdone.
Yeah.
Overdone. And that was important to keep the film in this mood that he has, you know, more like an experience with humor, with light moments, you know. And I heard from many Kurdish friends that they especially like this about the film.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I can imagine 100%. And I think, you know, it was like a film that was made by, I have to say, I mean, this is in your honor. It felt like a film that was made by a Kurdish person themselves.
That's interesting that you say that. Mm. I just realized, you know, there is a moment when you realize as a person that you're maybe not complete, something is missing. I mean, like I'm talking now about all of us, right? Mm-hmm. And when I first met Kurdish people, when I first lived with some Kurdish families, I was mesmerized. I was really impressed and I was confused. And I felt like there's something that I'm missing. There's something that I don't have in my life. And so step by step, I could get closer and I could complete myself in a way. And maybe that's why these men, they feel like I can be like maybe a mirror for them. Mm. I don't know whether you got this, what I wanted to say.
I absolutely did. And I think you definitely did achieve that, Derek. And I think anybody who watches it, you know, cannot come away from it without feeling such.
That would be great.
Yeah, love and sensitivity towards all the characters and towards Kurdish men in general. And I think, you know, for this sort of film, you know, would be sort of a great sort of basis for a discussion on, you know, on Kurdish manhood, if you like, you know. It's I think Kurdish men, I mean perhaps we're not the best people to be talking about this, but you know, the Kurdish men's identity in Turkey and Kurdistan obviously, you know, comes under such pressures from, you know, both the sort of patriarchal Turkish racist nationalism and also on the Kurdish side, you know, politically, the sort of the ideals sometimes that some of the men in the Kurdish movement, this idea of killing the man inside, and the sort of progressive nature that we see in Kurdish politics for Kurdish men. But I think just generally, it was just so sensitive and just showed Kurdish men, you know, in their, you know, not in the sort of general macho sense that they're stereotyped as, but as, you know, as so vulnerable. And
I'd like to mention, I'd like to mention something that might also be interesting for you. I realized that this film especially touched women very much.
Yes, I can imagine.
And, and they told me that they never had the chance to get so close to these men who maybe they can scare some women, you know, because this way of manhood is not often found in Europe or Northern Europe, this way of appearance. So I realized that when we had our screenings at festivals, we showed the film at festivals before the pandemic started. Mm-hmm. And women would ask questions after the show, you know?
Yeah.
And they were quite moved, touched. And now we have the chance to share this film with an audience all over the world, which is such an amazing, unique experience. And I would like to thank Ferhan Sturk personally for inviting me. Actually, he told me that I am the first non-Kurdish German director who contributes to this festival with the film. So I'm quite proud.
That's quite an honor, Dirk. And I can see absolutely why. I'd like to just finish off with a few. Actually, Ferhan, I spoke to him on the phone this morning, and I asked him, what kind of questions would you like to know about the film? And he says, yeah, Mark, I'd like to know what happened to those characters. Where are they now?
Maybe that's a good question to end our conversation. Yeah. I mentioned Miro first because he is very much still very close to me. We try to keep up with news because I'm now in Frankfurt in Germany preparing a new film, and he is still in Istanbul. He has switched to another work. He's now in a company that works with concrete, I think is the English word, right? Concrete.
Okay. Yes, concrete.
And,
yes.
So there is still a lot of construction work going on. And so he has still, he suffers from the working conditions. He's not very happy with it, but he has overcome, you know, the tension with his family. They have finally accepted that he doesn't want to marry yet. He feels it's too early. So he still has time, hopefully, to decide about love or marriage by himself, hopefully.
Yeah.
Hajo is now working again also on another construction site. There is Egid, who is still working with Lokman together, also demolishing, because that is their job, you know. And Lokman, by the way, he really is an usta in demolishing. And so they keep doing more or less the same work. And of course, they don't complain so much, you know, even though the situation in Turkey politically and economically is deteriorating. But they keep up with their humor and with their attitude. Then Ikram has left Istanbul. He is now in Aegean coast. You know, he always wanted to move. He wanted to be somewhere else, to travel. And who else is there? And Azad, he has finally achieved. He wanted to try his luck in the film business, actually, after this film.
Wonderful.
And he now is a focus puller, an assistant in a crew. I think this was with the help of our producer. Which is a great news, I think. Even though it doesn't mean that it is only easy. Of course, you know, this can always end again. Or, I mean, it's very difficult for people to plan the future if you don't have the privilege to have an education, or if you always have to stop working if something happens to the family. And that is what is true for the Kurdish people mostly, you know?
Absolutely. Listen, Dirk Schaefer, thank you so much for giving us an insight into the lives of Lokman, Hajo, Chobar, Miro, Azad, Egid, Ikram, and Blossom. And our thoughts and solidarity go out to Suzanne, who must have taken a lot of stick for not showing her love back to Miro. But thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was an absolute pleasure. And everybody, you can watch Bekar Evi, The Bachelor House, by just going to Kurdish Film Festival, globalkurdishfilmfestival.com, and Dirk's wonderful, beautiful, sensitive film is there just waiting for you. So again, Dirk Jaeger, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much, and congratulations on such an amazing achievement.
Thanks again. Take care.
Bye-bye.